Okay, it's the Taylor Report, and Tony Lea has joined us. So Tony is a Unifor veteran. He's the author of The Truth About the 37 GM Strike, and it's Baraka Books, and everybody should have a copy. This is a great Canadian book about a great Canadian organizing drive that took on the state and took on General Motors. Welcome to the program, Tony.
Great to be with you, Phil.
Well, I started the show today, Tony, by reading the statement by the Canadian Labour Congress, which was, to me, quite eloquent for them. And, you know, I want to say, I'm not saying that I agree with every point, but the news is that they've said something as clear as they have said. And they point out that they did say this in June. Maybe they're getting tired of being ignored by the various people to whom they're addressing their statements. What's your impression of what's going on with the Canadian labor movement on the subject of Gaza, Palestine?
I think there's been a very dramatic shift. It's clear that I think the majority of Canadians, the majority of union members are appalled at what we see happening in Gaza and want our organizations to speak out more forcefully. And initially, there were a few unions that took a stand, called for a ceasefire, but a lot of major organizations did not take very clear positions at the beginning, and that's really dramatically shifted in the last couple of months. And we now have the statement that you read from the Canadian Labour Congress, representing about 4 million workers in Canada, but there's also been very strong statements from NUPGE, which represents over 400,000 provincial public service workers. QP all along has been very strong.
QP's been in the vanguard.
And the Ontario Federation of Labour, representing over a million workers in Ontario, issued a very strong statement just recently. And you can tell how important it is to them to make sure that the message is received properly. The headline of their statement is, "This is genocide. Stop starving Gaza."
Hmm.
There's also been strong statements from Unifor, my union, since the end of June. And that's remarkable as well, because we can go back just to last December when a Unifor local put forward a resolution to the Ontario Council of Unifor calling for a ceasefire and an embargo on arms to Israel, and it was defeated in December. And they've now shifted all the way to the point where Lana Payne's Unifor statement to the government is to call for urgent intervention to end the genocide and calling explicitly for an end to all arms and military equipment.
That's a very advanced
part of a global arms embargo on Israel.
That's a very advanced point of view, too.
Yes.
Because I was mentioning it at the top of the show, these statements in the past tended to be, when they were uttered, rather boilerplate, as we say, just generalization. But these are getting more and more specific. These had to do with feeding the people of Gaza, preventing starvation, but also the ending arms shipment so that these attacks can't continue.
Yes, I think that's a fundamental element of solidarity with people of Palestine, workers in Palestine, the unions in Palestine have been calling for that for a long time. And we've seen actions by workers in other countries actually striking or interfering with the shipment of arms to Israel. And that's real concrete solidarity. And it's great that finally the labor movement in Canada, most of the important unions are calling for an arms embargo. Mm-hmm. And I guess the next step that we should be watching for is actively taking steps to prevent shipment of arms to Israel.
Yeah, now, which would bring us to a body that has done human work, is the Labor for Palestine. And I believe you're a member of that.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a member of Labor for Palestine. We have a UNIFOR group within that body, and that was the group that was able to get the resolution put forward last December to the Ontario Council, and there's been growing support, and we now have two locals that submitted a resolution to the upcoming UNIFOR convention, which is at the end of this month in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And, we're hopeful that there'll be more support for that now in light of Lana's letter. And we have supported that letter, congratulated Lana for it, and are organizing a petition for UNIFOR members to indicate that they support it, which is being done online through the Action Network. And I think hundreds of UNIFOR members so far have signed on to that, calling for not just congratulating the statement, but calling for UNIFOR to take further steps, including negotiating hot cargo clauses in collective agreements.
Well, tell me what a hot cargo clause is.
That would be recognition by the employer that the union members have a right to not handle anything which is designated hot cargo. So in the case of support for Gaza and for Palestinians, it would mean that if the union declares that something is being shipped to support the Israeli occupation forces, mm-hmm. that they could refuse to handle it and not be disciplined. That would be recognized within the collective agreement.
And that does happen in North America. On the West Coast longshoremen in the U.S. and I believe Canada, but it's definitely the U.S., have had moments where they wouldn't load or unload a ship. Am I right?
They've had a long, really noteworthy, praiseworthy history of doing that. They took action against apartheid in South Africa, and the Pinochet coup in Chile, and now on they're taking a strong stand also on what's happening in Gaza and the attacks on Palestinians. Yes. And that kind of international solidarity is really means something.
Yeah, and then, by the way, of course, as pointed out by the president of the Canadian Labor Congress, that they are part of an international labor body which is in agreement with them on all their points, which would point, certainly unions in Europe and elsewhere who are part of that international group, they are taking steps on hot cargo. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. You read news almost every day of one group of workers or another. There was an action in France recently where workers struck against, to prevent arms being shipped to Israel. Mm-hmm. And we should be joining in those efforts.
Yeah. Now, there is a labor leader, probably in terms of, let's build our unions, the great project which all labor congresses say they're in favor of and want to expand unions. The best-known labor leader who has attempted to make a breakthrough in building a union labor movement is Chris Smalls, and he has recently joined in the I forget the title of it, but those who are attempt to sail to Gaza to deliver humanitarian aid. He was there. Could you talk about it?
Yeah, he was on, part of the Freedom Flotilla. A number of boats have made efforts to bring humanitarian supplies to Gaza. And the most recent one, I think the ship was called the Handara. And as has been typical, the Israeli forces intercepted it in international waters, which is illegal, and impounded the boat and imprisoned the people who were on it, including Chris Smalls. And he was singled out and roughed up and beaten held longer than the others, but was eventually released. And when he returned to the United States, there was quite a crowd of supporters waiting for him.
Chris Smalls is a black American.
Yes.
And it clearly, it's been pointed out that the labor movement for years struggled for equality in membership and to win the rights of black workers. And it seems to be still a question or seems to be a factor. My understanding is that he was the only person who got this beating, and you just said special treatment, right?
He was singled out.
Special negative treatment.
Yes, he was singled out for abuse. He was beaten quite severely, I understand, and he was the only black member of that particular group on the flotilla. I think that Jagmeet Singh posted a comment, in support of Chris Smalls, with a picture of the two of them when they met a while ago. So it is getting some attention.
I'm really glad to hear that. I have to say, by the way, the news again is not. Mainstream media does not want to report, particularly Freedom Flotilla. This has been an ongoing, really wonderful effort, and wonderful people who have international reputations for great causes have been part of it. But the media has done its best to keep that out of the news. But still, the word is getting around. I mean, clearly there is some kind of demographic shift taking place, and particularly amongst the working class movement and trade unions. We're speaking to Tony Lea. He is the author of The Truth About the 37 Auschwitz GM Strike, Baraka Books, and everyone should have a copy of that. Tony, we have to ask you, of course, about tariffs and the auto industry. You heard this news that a couple of our ministers are going to Mexico to meet with the president there. And so, what is your impression of the crisis? As clearly as a crisis, because Mr. Trump gave us a deadline, and then, as I understand it, that the prime minister called, according to the White House, there was a call from our prime minister to our president, Trump, and Trump didn't take the call, which is, I don't know how much more they want to do to kind of see how they can rub our nose in this problem. But how is the auto sector, what is its current situation in terms of this trade business and the struggle that's going to have to be waged to protect jobs in the industry?
There's still a lot of uncertainty about where things are going to end up. At the moment, there are tariffs on vehicles assembled in Canada being shipped to the United States, and people should know that over 90% of vehicles assembled in Canada are exported to the United States. And so it's having a huge impact. Every auto plant in Canada has had some effects. There's been cutbacks in my plant in Oshawa. There's been an announcement that one of the shifts is going to be eliminated in the fall. So that's one-third of the plant. And that production has been shifted to Indiana, Fort Wayne, the Fort Wayne plant. And I expect there'll be more of that if the tariffs remain in place. Because the companies that we're dealing with are really not Canadian companies. General Motors and Ford are U.S. companies, of course. We have Stellantis, which is actually a French and Italian auto company headquartered in the Netherlands, which took over Chrysler a number of years ago. We have Toyota and Honda. So those companies make their decisions based on their bottom line, their profitability, and their desire to be in favor with the U.S. government as well, and with the Trump administration. And so, you know, they're not acting on our behalf. And workers in Canada are stuck with employers that have different interests than them, and a government which also seems to not be particularly committed to defending workers in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Let's contrast something. It raises the issue of electric vehicles, and this guy gets two matters. It seems to me we ought to... Canada ought to, if we're going to tear our hair out and be angry, as we should be, upset at being at having tariffs placed on us, maybe it's time to eat crow and admit we shouldn't have put 100% tariff ourselves on China on electric vehicles, which could be, I would assume, negotiated, either permitted to sell or permitted to build them here. Now, Norway, I'll just throw in the name, they have an arrangement with China, in my understanding, to build or buy electric vehicles. Could you talk about this at this subject?
Sure, and I think that, and we've talked about this a number of times, but before Trump started implementing this tariff regime, Unifor supported the Canadian government in falling in line with U.S. policy, which was dictated by Biden at that time, of severe tariffs against electric vehicles assembled in China, 100%, as you mentioned. And as soon as the U.S. government did that, the Canadian government was in lockstep with it. And unfortunately, Unifor applauded that and said they would support any action against Chinese products imported into Canada. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's to our benefit. And you know, it's strikingly obvious that after taking that position, within a few months, really, we saw it turned against us. And tariffs implemented that affected Canadian workers or Canadian production. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that should give you pause about the position that was taken earlier. And certainly in many countries, Chinese assembled vehicles are playing an important role because they're advanced technologically, actually far in advance of the U.S. companies at this point, particularly on electric vehicle technology. They're cheaper, they're great quality, and so people can benefit from buying them. They're certainly an important part of the market in Norway, and where the government in Norway took a position a number of years ago that they thought that electric vehicles would be better for their country, for their population, and so they put in place policies that would enhance that. And government policies work. Last year, 90% of new passenger vehicles sold in Norway were fully electric. 90%.
90%. Yeah, they're headed for 100%.
They're headed for, yes, absolutely. And it's because of government policy. And policies that we could be taking. So if we look at the crisis we're in right now, where tariffs implemented by the U.S. that we have no control over could be devastating large parts of the Canadian economy and the auto industry for sure, we should be taking policies that would benefit Canadians. So
bingo. I have to cut you off there. I'm afraid we have our time is up, and good old 334578 is coming in. So Tony Leah, thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Phil.
Bye bye. 334578 coming up.